Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Cloudera on Federal News Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Federal Insights. I'm Eric White. Cybersecurity data is not the only kind of data necessary for network defenses. One facet of the government that helps exemplify that is the Army's Defensive Cyber Operations in its Program Executive Office Enterprise Information System, or PEOEIS. Recently, Federal News Network's Jared Serbu got a chance to discuss this topic with DCO's project manager, Colonel Mark Taylor.
Project manager for defensive cyber operations, pretty much all our programs deal with data in one way, shape, or form. We're touching that, and a lot of our mission resides in interpreting that data, and that's, on the defense side of the house, being able to navigate through that data and be able to find the threats in there, mitigate, control, and defeat them. It's across all the programs. Now, I would say a lot of my particular project office focuses more on the enterprise side of the network right now, but we do have touch points into the tactical. But as we move forward, the unified network operations requirements documents that is out there, the network is going to be coming together as one. So we'll be focused across all the network. But what I call on kind of the tactical side of the enterprise network, we use the deployable DCO systems modular. That's the prime weapon system of the cyber protection team. Whenever there's a threat identified or to believe to be some type of intrusion, those cyber protection teams or CPTs will take that kit and go on site and start doing their DCO mission. So in collecting data to do that. Also do that on the Garrison DCO platform. That capability is installed at high value targets across the enterprise network. So a cyber team wouldn't necessarily have to deploy physically to that location, but they could remote in and use the various software tools that we have to conduct that DCO mission. So that's it, the tactical side. And they'll collect that data. They can do their mission on board or on station, or sometimes that data will come back and be analyzed more in depth and fed into what I call it our strategic level on the Gabriel Nimbus, the Army's big data platform. That big data platform, large amounts of data of varying size, we would run analytics across a lot of that data and be able to determine if a threat actor attacked a certain part of the network, is he somewhere else? So that is a way where we link the tactical side of the enterprise network up to the strategic level and help inform decisions moving forward. That may not only just remain on the defensive side, it may go across into other operations. So data is fundamentally where we're at, and how that is managed in the future is critical to what we do.
A lot there. Let me start by asking a little bit about those three different sort of levels that you talked about. I mean, you've got the deployable kits that are going forward that are going to have some limited capability to have data with them that they take forward. So you're going to have to make some decisions about what you load them out with. Then, at slightly higher capability to store and compute, I would imagine, at the Garrison. And then the big data platform. Different limitations in all three, right? And I imagine even at that big data platform level, you don't want to put everything in there. You want relevant stuff in there. So how do you think about what level and type of data to put in each one of those three different types of buckets? Does that question make sense?
No, that's a very good question. First, down at the lower level with the cyber protection teams and preparing them for a mission, training or a real-world mission. Our deployable DCO systems modular, or DDSMs, they are housed in what we call an armory, similar to an armory or an arms room in an infantry battalion that's full of M4 assault rifles or machine guns. in a DCO armory, we keep the DDSMs, that hardware solution, and then the most recent upload of all our DCO tools, all those DCO software tools that are used to conduct the mission. So the kits are maintained at three levels: hot, warm, and cold. So for hot kits, there's a standard load that we put on there that if a team has to deploy immediately, or they don't have time to set up a kit in exactly the way they want it, they can grab one of those, get it checked out, go do their mission. Warm status, they have the basic load on, and then it might take 9 or 10 hours to configure it just the way they want, in a way that they can conduct the mission just the way they need. And then a cold status kit, it's basically sitting in the locker, getting ready to be loaded up. So that's how the armories work, and how they work hand in hand with the cyber protection teams, those cyber warriors, to prepare for a mission. The Garrison defense platforms, they hold data for a longer period of time. I won't say exactly how long they hold them, but it's not years on end, but we'll be able to hold it for a relevant amount of time on those garrisons. And then as necessary, as our tactics and procedures determine, we can age that data off. But then at the strategic level, as you stated, determining what data and how much to keep is very important. And if the data scientists had their way in a uncost constrained environment, you'd keep all your data readily accessible. But we are in a cost constrained environment, so we do have to make those decisions. And even at the strategic level, we do age certain data off. There's depending on the importance level and how much that data is accessed, is the determination of when it gets aged off, where it gets dropped on the floor, or even if it's not readily accessible, we'll put it into a cold storage status where it can be compressed and held for long periods of time. But that is definitely an important piece of this mission, on the DCO mission, on how much of that data we keep readily available at a high level to be searched, and how much that we just save for access at a later time if we need to go into it once a infiltration is identified. And needing to do the forensics and the postmortem on it.
That's Colonel Mark Taylor, Project Manager at the Army's Program Executive Office Enterprise Information Systems. We'll have more from this interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in, refocus it, filter it, direct it? What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.
We now return to our interview with Colonel Mark Taylor of Army PEO EIS. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu.
Let me go back to sort of the high-level AI analytical tools that I think are starting to come into play here. I assume all of that's got to be happening up there at the strategic level in the big data platform for the most part, especially to the extent you're doing any kind of longitudinal or historical analysis on that. How mature are whatever tools you're using in that analytics space? Are you seeing a lot of value out of those? Are they answering questions about threats that you wouldn't have answered otherwise? Or is this still kind of a holy grail that you need industry help with?
Well, it's a little bit of all of that. So I would say that we definitely need industry help. But, just to actually down here today and meeting with our Fort Gordon teammates that are doing the hard work on Gabriel Nimbus every day, the other green suitors, in a development security and operations or DevSecOps types format, they're up close and personal with the data, and they will have, programmers that will develop quick scripts or quick apps that are kind of basic. Those green servers would do that to run some type of a tailored analytic to get after an answer that or a question that they have, and that might work in the hours and the days that they need that quick answer. But beyond that, if they need a more robust app or a more robust analytic to use on the data housed in Gabriel Nimbus, that's where industry will come in, and there'll be that interface with the cyber warrior. But then industry has its reach back to whatever intellectual firepower that they have and technical expertise to develop an analytic that can be responsive to those questions that we're asking. Now, it sometimes takes more time, you know, for industry to generate some of those larger apps, but you know, their technical expertise is available to assist those cyber warriors to maybe do some of those scripts in a DevSecOps type format or timeline. I hope that helps and gets after a little bit.
It sure does. Next area I was going to go to is the issue of data silos, which has been a problem in the Army since forever. It sounds like you've solved a good part of it by moving to the big data platform that we've been talking about. But as far as the point at which the data is generated in the first place, across all of the programs that you manage, how far have you gone toward insisting on open data standards or some kind of standards so that this data actually can be ingested in an understandable and common way once you need to apply those analytics to it?
Yeah, that's been a big topic of conversation down here among the senior leaders, General Barrett, Mr. Gucker, and then the other PEOs. Yeah, data has been a problem on how we've generated a lot of that data in the past and how it's managed. So moving forward, the Army published its data strategy, and the PEO is very much at the forefront of this for ASALT, as is PEO C3T. So PEO C3T and EIS coupled together, implementing on how we will meet the objectives that are in the data strategy. PMDCO, we are a component of that, as are all the other PMs within EIS. We have internal coordination on how we are going to get a lot of those data standards right, so that in the future, managing that data, moving that data, turning that data into knowledge and allowing actionable decisions definitely is what our senior leaders are focused on. It will take a little bit of time, but that is something that you'll see focused over the next couple of years. And as I touched on before, the unified network operations, that getting that tactical side, a lot of data being generated there, managed there, and used for actionable decisions. Same thing happens on the enterprise side, but we need to join those two together. So from the strategic enterprise side all the way out to the tactical edge, that data can be shared and managed and used to make those actionable decisions. It's on everybody's mind down here and the senior and all the senior leaders across the Army that deal in this domain, because it touches all the domains, not just cyber.
You're listening to our interview with Colonel Mark Taylor, Program Manager at PEOEIS. We'll have part three of the discussion after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in, refocus it, filter it, direct it? What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.
Here's part three of our interview with Colonel Mark Taylor from Army PEOEIS, discussing cybersecurity data with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu.
Not just cyber.
I may be going out a little bit on a limb here, but I assume getting to a place where all of that data is in standardized formats that are more useful to you. It becomes easier if you're refreshing systems more quickly and purging some of the legacy out more quickly. And I think that's one thing that you're starting to achieve with this new experiment that people may have heard referred to as the BA8 pilot. People will have also heard of this as the single software color of money. You've got some programs making use of that new pilot authority. Tell us what you've seen from it so far and what extent you're excited about it.
Yeah, I tell you, good question. The software and digital technology pilot, or otherwise known as the BA8 or the Budget Activity 8 pilot, it's been really, really good at add another level of flexibility to our war chest to operate in the cyber domain. The software and digital technology pilot, or otherwise known as the BA8 or the Budget Activity 8 pilot, it's been really, really good at add another level of flexibility to our war chest to operate in the cyber domain. So understanding that the planning, programming, and budgeting system that we use, you know, that industrial age planning system where we lay in the funding for programs. Like today, I am making decisions for fiscal year 24. It is very difficult for me in 2021 to determine exactly what type of money I will need in fiscal year 24 to execute my mission. In the cyber domain, the threat moves very fast and is constantly changing, and innovation moves very quickly on the friendly side. So this BA8 pilot just removes one variable, removes one potential roadblock whenever we get into the year of execution, trying to execute our mission. Right now, PMDCO and our portfolio is the only portfolio participating in the BA8 pilot in FY21 and FY22. But the if Congress continues to approve it, the Army plans to add more programs to this, similar programs to DCO. I think it's a big win for programs in this domain to enable flexibility, enable the warfighter, allow us to get capability into the hands of those cyber warriors much more quickly. One other piece of flexibility that is added to our toolkit is the IT box framework for requirements. So a lot of what we build is governed by the Defensive Cyber Operations Information Systems Initial Capabilities document, shorter, the DCOISICD. And under that, there's a lot of flexibility with that. So there's cost thresholds listed within that requirements document. And underneath that umbrella, there's requirements definition packages. So for each program of a record, there's a lower level document, an RDP, that is approved at a lower level, not way up at the four-star Joint Requirements and Oversight Council level, the JROC. These RDPs are approved at the two-star level by G8 Force Development. So much lower level of approval. And then all these programs are ACAT level 4. And what's that mean? That means for the Milestone Decision Authority, it doesn't rest at the Army Acquisition Executive. It doesn't rest at the PEO. It resides at my level, the 06 level, to make those decisions required to put something on contract, get the development going, ultimately delivering capability. So cost thresholds, staying in cost thresholds, and powering down the acquisition authority to the lowest level possible at the 06 is about as flexible of a requirement as I can get. So we got flexible requirements, flexible funding, and then, you know, in previous years, Congress and the Army authorized, you know, other transaction authorities. So flexible contracting arrangements to allow us to, you know, get items on contract quickly. So you got requirements, funding, and contract strategies, all increased flexibility to enable us to get capability out quicker in this domain.
Yeah, maybe you can say a little bit more about how you're using those OTA authorities. That COBRA OTA and the C-RAPID process that the Army set up for cyber is a few years old at this point now. So talk a little bit about how that's going and how much you're actually using that OTA authority.
As I discussed, our flexible contracting strategies and the COBRA OTA is one of those that we use. Just want to give you how we think of these flexible contracting strategies. As requirements are emerging, if we can start prototyping on an OTA to inform that requirement, and then if the requirement is formalized, actually working on that capability that we're going to field, the OTA is a great option. Now, as the program becomes more mature and different, second and third iterations of a capability that we get out there in a fast cycle, there's a time that it makes sense to convert over to a FAR-based contract, and we do that. So about half of my actions or efforts are on OTAs, and about a half of them are on FAR-based contract. So it's a great tool that we used, but some of the traditional contracting strategies also are also work. So a mix and having a couple different tools in that kit bag to use is a good thing.
You've been listening to our interview with Colonel Mark Taylor, who is Project Manager for Defensive Cyber Operations at Army PEO EIS. If you missed any part of this interview, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for August, sponsored by Cloudera on Federal News Network.
Data travels at the speed of light, moving past us in every direction. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the chaos of it all, but what if you could take it all in? Refocus it, filter it, direct it. What would you discover? Something profound? Something beautiful? Something that moves you? The right data moves leaders and organizations to bring their vision to life. Cloudera, data that moves you. Visit cloudera.com/public sector to learn more.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this VA research nugget. Many people with spinal cord injury are at risk for serious respiratory infections and pneumonia because they can't clear their lungs and airways. To address this problem, VA researchers developed a cough stimulator that's now in clinical use. Stimulators acting on nerves that control the respiratory muscles make more natural breathing possible for many patients with spinal cord injury. The technology reduces the rate of respiratory infections, improves quality of life, and slashes the cost of care for veterans and others with spinal cord injury. VA researchers continue trying to improve the technology. Advances could expand its use in veterans with spinal cord injury, as well as in others who have difficulty coughing, for example, because of strokes or ALS. To learn more about VA research, go to research.va.gov. That's research.va.gov. I'm Mike Richmond. Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this VA research nugget. In the 1960s, VA undertook the first well-designed placebo-controlled trial to show whether medication can prevent death in those with moderate high blood pressure. The research led to a revolution in the care of people with hypertension. In 1964, Dr. Edward Fries and colleagues launched a VA study on antihypertensive agents. The study showed that drug treatment for moderate high blood pressure reduced patient deaths by over 50%. Previously, high blood pressure was considered a normal part of aging, and it was not known that treating high blood pressure could prevent death. In 1971, Fries received the prestigious Albert Lasker Award for his historic work on blood pressure treatment. To learn more about VA research, go to research.va.gov. That's research.va.gov. I'm Mike Richmond.